This is the Gas House Gang on 104.1 FM KMOX.
Sponsored by Saligi Heating and Cooling, a Daikin Comfort dealer. And by Overhead Door Company of St. Louis, Chesterfield Fence and Deck, and Budweiser.
Now, the Gas House Gang on KMOX.
Great to be with you. Chris Ranji's in with me. I'm Tom Ackerman. How you doing, buddy?
Good, buddy. Let's go. What do you got?
Let's do it. I got a good Budweiser toast for you today. Oh, yeah. I have Hall of Famer Dan Dierdorf with us at 12:30, and I can't wait to talk to him. He is going to be inducted into the Missouri Broadcasters Association Hall of Fame this Friday. Well-deserved, of course. He's a KMOX legend. He's a former Monday Night Football analyst and a longtime analyst with CBS as well, with Greg Gumbel and all of the things that he's done in his illustrious career. And he started it as a broadcaster on KMOX. He was really trained by Jack Buck. And as a player, he was doing things already with the Big Red, with Football Cardinals when he was on KMOX. So it'll be great to have Dan on the show at the bottom of the hour. Pal, yesterday's game was not good. I mean, it was a great comeback, I thought, by the Cardinals to string together some hits in the seventh and make it a game. They could not add in that seventh inning. And while everyone rags on Riley O'Brien, maybe not everybody, but that's kind of the trend that I saw. Like, oh, no, what are they going to do at closer? And we'll talk about that. I really thought the game was lost in the eighth.
Execution.
You got a leadoff double by Jimmy Crooks. You pinch run for him with Thomas Sejace. Let's go. Cardinals have a chance to bring a run home. Vic's got to drop down a bunt there or do something. And he pops up in foul territory, a bunt, and it's caught. Then J.J. Weatherhold, I won't let him off the hook either. He pops one up to shortstop, out number two. And then Herrera grounds out, and the inning's over. And you got Sejace standing there at second base. So that's a tough one for the Cardinals. They can't get runs across, and they lose 7-4.
So we had the conversation yesterday about Victor Scott right toward the end. I think it was right toward the end. We had Bernie and you and me. And my contention with Scott is, you know what? Unless somebody is absolutely forcing your hand or forcing their hand, meaning you got to call this dude up, you have to. And they've already made a couple of call-ups as it is. So it's not like they have been afraid to dip down to the lower levels and bring somebody up if they feel like they need to. I am a proponent of being as measured as possible with all the incoming talent, meaning do not bring somebody up before they are ready to go. And I realize Joshua Baez is not the same kind of player as Jordan Walker. I know he didn't have the same sort of struggles in the minors. He's got a big strikeout problem. Walker's always had a little bit of that, but his problem was more hitting the ball into the ground. But still, you don't want to bring somebody up too early. And I'm not the one who's going to be able to tell you whether or not bringing him up now is too early. And so my contention is, whenever they feel comfortable doing it, go ahead. But don't feel like you need to rush because Victor Scott is incapable of executing at the plate, because at least he's still giving you defense. This is not one of those seasons that you have to worry about the season getting away from you, because this wasn't supposed to be a season that you were expected to win the division or expected to make the playoffs. The most important thing the Cardinals can do in 2026 is continue to develop, continue to move closer to being a true competitive team that is expected to win the division. That's not what this year is. So if you want to be patient with Scott and keep him in the lineup and keep him playing in center field, I'm okay with that. However, when stuff like last night happens, it makes it pretty glaring that you've got a runner at second base, and it kind of destroys my argument, I guess. If you want to win right this second, it does, because you got this guy at second base with nobody out. And in those cases, I really don't like giving up the out, but it shows you that Oliver Marmol is not confident that he can either put the ball in the air deep enough to advance the runner or get a hit where he has to lay down a bunt. And that's not good either, right? So I'm talking out of both sides of my mouth here, but I do think the ultimate goal is to be smart about your young players that aren't here yet. and bring them up only when they are ready to go and you feel like they are ready to go. That's what I'm saying here.
Yeah, it's all good. There's no wrong answer there. I mean, you're kind of going through it and trying to, you know, figure out how it all works together. I will say this. I think the Cardinals showed their cards a little bit on how they want to replace underperforming players. And Chaim Bloom and Ollie Marmol both said it about Nolan Gorman. Someone has to show that they are ready to take the spot. And when the competition is good enough to take the spot, they take the spot. I believe that competition has arrived. And I think that person is Nathan Church. So what I think will happen is, but the key is Nathan's got to be healthy.
Right.
So if Lars Nootbaar is ready to roll, which I think he will be, it sounds like in a day or two, maybe longer, but maybe as soon as this weekend against the Reds, then he becomes your left fielder and Vic's got one last chance till Nathan Church gets healthy. And when Nathan Church finishes his rehab, which I think is a step behind where Lars is, then Nathan Church becomes your center fielder. If there is a little bit of a setback there, keep your eye on Baez, because Baez had 4 hits yesterday again. This guy is cooking right now. And the difference between Baez and Walker is that Baez has been in the system longer, actually, in terms of the minor leagues.
Right.
Has had a longer run of minor leagues than Walker did. Walker was drafted in 2000. He had that canceled year because of COVID. He ended up making the Cardinals team at the age of 21, too young, too early. That was in 2023. Baez, different deal. Baez was drafted in the second round, as Walker was drafted in the first round. Baez was drafted in the second round in 2021, the following year. And he's been in the minors ever since. And in rookie ball, he actually struggled a little bit. He hit only 158. He hit 267 in 2022. Over 2 different teams, and that would be 2 different teams, again, combined. Then in 23, he hit it wasn't great, 218. In 2024, again, he's still sort of working his way through this. He works his way into Peoria finally, but combined between 2 teams, he only hits 245. It wasn't until last year that I think they're really proud of the fact that Baez came along and was one of the recipients of this new minor league system that they put together. All these coordinators, they were just starting to work it, and Baez, just like Bryson Motz was a recipient of, a beneficiary of, I should say, of this new evaluation. And Baez flourished big time. Last year, he hit 287. He had 20 home runs, 79 RBIs, and 54 stolen bases. That's because he was getting on base at a clip of 384. Now, this past year, as you noted, he's had some strikeout issues. But, man, the numbers are hard to ignore otherwise at AAA. He's hitting 262, a 342 on base. That's fine. But he has 16 home runs, 42 RBIs, and he's stolen 11 bags. Yes, he's struck out 73 times, and he's only walked 18 times. But if he shows some signs of continuing to improve on that like Jimmy Crooks did, I think Baez will get a look. But again, this is only if the opportunity is there and competition for Vic has arrived. I mean, it is on top of him now. He just doesn't have the ability to hit or execute at a high level. We love his defense. The guy can fly. He's a great dude and all that stuff. But that doesn't always work at this level.
Right. That's the thing, is that if you can't hit, you better, and they ask you to lay down a bunt, you better do it. You have to execute there. And again, I'm not the biggest fan of bunting. I don't like the idea of having to do it in that situation with nobody out, because the odds of scoring a run with a leadoff runner at second, you know, nobody out, you've got a really high chance of getting that run home even without laying down a bunt and sacrificing an out. But if you're going to do it, you got to do it. It's just the only thing that concerns me about Baez at this point. And it could be a thing where you're just going to have to live with it and see what happens. Bring him up, let him go, see what happens. Tell him, hey, don't worry about how you're getting out. Just do what you do and be yourself. And If you do strike out a bunch, so be it. Just, you know, show us some power. What does concern me is that that percentage is up 11 points from last year. His strikeout percentage in the minor leagues combined between A and double A was around 20-21%, and now it's at 31 as he made the jump to triple A. I just don't see that getting better when he gets here. Maybe I'm wrong. You know, maybe he gets up here and just figures out how to make better contact and has the power. Like, I don't care if he has a 31% strikeout percentage if he's also hitting bombs. But my fear would be that he gets up here and that 31% gets closer to 40. Mm-hmm. And then he starts to doubt himself a little more and you're not even getting the power on top of it.
It's fair. I mean, that's what I said all along with Crooks. When Crooks was at 34%, I'm like, what do you think it's going to be up here?
Right, right, right.
You know, but he had a nice day yesterday and it showed some signs. And I'm willing to give it a chance, but only if the opportunity is there for Baez. Otherwise, I think it gives you an excuse.
Don't force it.
Yeah,
it gives you an excuse. Just don't force it.
Baez, let the seasoning continue down there where he's playing every day and where he's learning the ups and downs of the game. And he's only 22. Now he'll turn 23 later this month. But he's still a young pup, and he's got a ways to go. It's going to get interesting. I'll tell you what. Let's do this. Let's take a break. But when we come back, I would like our participants on YouTube especially. That seems to where we get a lot of comments, although without naming the person, there is one person who comments on YouTube about Ollie Marmol. And I'm just about that Ollie Marmol should be fired. It's like every single day. And I think it's the same person using a lot of different accounts. Because
is it your burner?
It is, yeah, right. So I'm just going to say it's gotten to the point we don't really care, but I think it's gotten to the point your fellow commenters are starting to get a little irritated and we may have to put you in timeout.
No, come on, man. Let the sandpaper exist. Let the flies
is
get
it okay?
Him. Yeah, I think we should let everybody else in the comment section tear into him.
We won't put you in timeout then. There you go. You just got saved.
You did, because I want to watch everybody. I want the piranhas to pile on this guy.
Because I'll say this. Let me pour gasoline on the fire then. Ollie Marmol did it. A good thing yesterday by calling out his players and holding them accountable. We don't hear Ollie like that all the time. I think that he is very encouraging about, hey, you know, we're giving it a good effort. We lost the game, but I'm telling you, we're taking good at-bats. Last night, he was pissed.
Well,
he didn't like it.
And you know what? With us, we have seen him... I think going back to last year on the Tuesdays, the show that we started last year with him, you could read between the lines he was frustrated with some of these players. You could read that, but I think that for a fan base, they probably appreciate it when a manager calls it like they see it, but I understand why they don't, because they still have a clubhouse to protect.
Back in a moment on the Gas House Gang on KMOX. We're telling old stories from press conferences and gatherings. Good times.
Yeah.
Always good times.
Ben Johnson was mad at a reporter's cell phone going off today.
Yeah. Yeah, they can, depending on the mood. I was saying that one time I forgot to turn my ringer off, and Ollie looked down. The phone was on his desk in spring training, and it was a picture of Angie, and so my wife. So he picks it up. Hey, Angie, well, how's it going? She's like, great. And he said, it's Ollie Marmol. Oh, Ollie. And the kids are giggling in the background.
That's
funny.
Very funny.
He just carried on a conversation with all the reporters standing around.
Yep, it's spring training.
Moment.
You do whatever.
Yep.
That's my moment.
Welcome back.
Doesn't get any better than this.
Doesn't get much better than that in spring training. Welcome back to the Gas House Gang with Chris Ranji. I'm Tom Ackerman. Let's grab a couple of these comments. And I was about to say this, what Mike said, so I'm just going to let him take all the glory on this. But fans do need to remember that it is a building season. I'll call it a rebuild, Mike, and you're absolutely right. Allow the season to unfold and evaluate. The core and the system looks very promising. Stay the course. Yes. And the Cardinals are indeed on their way to making this very interesting this summer, but really... This is a team that is ahead of schedule. This is a team that is filled with players who have not played 162 games. That's just a fact. Their best starting pitcher right now is probably Michael McGreevy, and he's only had maybe 30 starts in his career. So it is a work in progress without a doubt, and it's a good comment by Mike.
Yeah, and Mike is, I mean, I think he's backing up basically what I am saying, is that no matter how it looks right now up here, unless a guy is just And I guess you could argue that Victor Scott is there. Just looks completely out of place. At the plate, anyway. Not in the field. He's doing perfectly fine out there. But it is... This is not something that you make hasty adjustments and bring up players who are not 90-95% ready to be here because you're afraid of the season slipping away, because it doesn't matter. Honestly, it doesn't for 2026. I know that you know, some people might say anytime you have an opportunity to go to the playoffs, you should take advantage of it. But we're barely a third through the season right now. And that's not what this year is supposed to be. And so much can change over the next couple of months. This is stay the course is absolutely right. Don't make any hasty decisions. That doesn't mean you never call somebody up, but they've already done it a couple of times in the last couple of weeks. So it's not like they're afraid to. So be as prudent as possible, because the only thing that matters is the future for the Cardinals.
Eline did say that sometimes the Cardinals' performance reminds you that it's a rebuild, and that's absolutely right. They are less than perfect, that's for sure. No team is, but they do show their flaws at times. This is one that some of the commenters liked on Real Third Man, so let's get to that. For what it's worth, Blaze Jordan is error-free in 2026, he says. Be bold, promote both Jordan and Baez, and send both Gorman and Scott to Memphis until they prove they can hit the ball at all. Nothing to lose. This is an interesting one. Now, Bernie Miklas made me giggle yesterday when he said that Blaze Jordan can play third. He could stand there, is the report on him. So there's no... The thing is, you've got, if you're going to replace Gorman, it's got to be somebody who's going to take the job, I think, and run with it. Not sure Sajacy's ready for that. And Ramon Arias has been hurt and banged up. They just don't have the guy yet that who's going to take that job and run with it. I think they'd rather go with Gorman for a while. And yesterday they were rewarded with a home run. So it does take time. I'm not saying the Blaze Jordan couldn't come up here and do some good things, but I'm not sure they're ready to go there just yet. But it's a good comment.
You know, my feeling on Gorman is I am more than comfortable, regardless of what we're seeing right now with the numbers, I am more than comfortable just letting him play the entire season. Unless there is somebody who emerges and says, you cannot ignore me anymore. You have to call me up.
Yeah.
But Gorman has not yet, and I don't know that it'll make a difference. It may never make a difference, but he has not yet played an entire full season, you know, healthy season, or not a season where he's splitting time with anybody. He's not had that yet. So will it change anything if he gets it? Maybe, maybe not. Maybe he never does, but I am perfectly fine with letting him play there all year long and seeing where we are in September.
He's an X-factor type player. If he did catch fire, you are going places. I mean, him potentially hitting 30 home runs at the second base position was very intriguing, because you rarely get that at that position. But it is what it is. This is Matt, who says, I think a Baez promotion happens by the All-Star break. I could absolutely see that by then. That could be enough time for sure. Steve has a story about the Big Red. We'll save that for Dan Dierdorf. And just kind of flipping through some of these comments, I think we've gotten to most of them that I wanted to get to, but there's a lot of good stuff in there.
Comments on YouTube, Facebook, Twitter, if you're watching the show, leave
hopefully
us one.
No lockout, says Deadly St. Louis. Yeah, that's, you know, we're at a point right now where I think there's a little bit of concern that this could linger into 2027. Right now, pretty much a line has been drawn. They will not accept a salary cap on the player side.
And I've only heard this from one place, and I don't know how much I believe in this as a possibility, but I have heard it is actually a possibility that they will kick the can down the road on this lockout and play one more year on a CBA, so that all the television contracts are up at the same time, so that they can do the CBA in conjunction with the new TV deals.
Okay.
So I wouldn't be surprised. It would, if they decide to go that route. Now, again, I don't know how much validity there is there, but it does sound like that could be a possibility.
Jim says, when they return from injury, Nathan Church assumes center field, Newt assumes left, Ramon Arias gets ABs at third against lefties, demote Vic, Sajacy, and Nelly, meaning Velasquez, or Páez. and he predicts they will keep Pajes. I would agree. They like Pajes on defense and his handling of pitchers. But, yeah, I do think that Church becomes the center fielder if Newt is left field and both are healthy. I think that makes more sense than having Scott out there every day. He is, unfortunately, giving you outs at the nine position in that lineup. One more from Eli. If we will have anyone from the Bosnia soccer team since they're staying in St. Louis during the World Cup. We did have on Sunday Elvir Kafedzik, who is the assistant coach of City 2, who is a Bosnian native and started the St. Louis Dragons Bosnian soccer club, and he was fantastic. If you want to hear that interview, he tells you everything you would need to know about Bosnia and Herzegovina being here this week, but it would be nice to have someone from that team once they get rolling. Let's let them get rolling a little bit. They just landed.
Am I wrong on this? Bosnia U.S. is the first game, isn't it? Isn't it the United States' first game?
Whoa, I shouldn't probably know that.
I know.
But I don't know that for sure. I know that
I'm just throwing stuff out there.
I'm just so laser focused on this Panama friendly on Saturday and then getting to what's next for them. But that maybe that is the case, and I just didn't know that. We'll take a quick timeout. When we come back, we're going to be joined by Dan Dierdorf. He is our Budweiser Toast of the Week. But for right now, I want to tell you about what you could do sitting outside with an ice cold frosty one, and that is enjoying your brand new or updated patio, deck, maybe even a sunroom or screen room. That's what Chesterfield Fence and Deck can do for you. Chesterfield Fence and Deck, the sign you have the very best is Chesterfield Fence and Deck. They are located in Chesterfield, but they serve the entire St. Louis metro area. They're huge baseball fans. Maybe that'll encourage you folks to head out there and chat with them a little bit. But here's what I would do. Go to their showroom in Chesterfield Valley. Take a little walk around and see all of it for yourself. A friendly associate will come talk to you about what your ideas are. They'll set up a free in-home consultation. You have nothing to lose there. And you'll have the best team on your side. And then they'll talk you through your budget and what you might be able to accomplish with a new, maybe more than you think, with Chesterfield Fence and Deck. If you mention me, Tom Ackerman, how about this? 20% off your next outdoor project with Chesterfield Fence and Deck. The sign you have the very best. Ah, yes, the Big Red. Those were the days of the 1970s in St. Louis. What a team. What a team. And one of the anchors, the anchor of the offensive line in those days was the Pro Football Hall of Famer, Dan Dierdorf, a Missouri Broadcasters Association Hall of Famer, coming up this Friday. There will be seven members joining the Missouri Broadcasters Association Hall of Fame at Margaritaville Lake Resort at the Lake of the Ozarks. And we are excited to have Dan Dierdorf back on KMOX this afternoon. Hi, Dan.
Where in the heck? You've got some archive to go back and find that music.
Yeah. What is that? What does that remind you of?
I'll tell you what, it's the second it started, I knew exactly what it was.
That's right. Does that remind you of warming up before the game, or what is?
Yeah, the only thing missing would be Bob Cuban and his band was always playing, and brings back great memories.
What a time. What a time indeed, and what a team. Well, what does it mean to you, Dan? John Rooney, our great friend, is going to be the MC on this evening, this Friday evening, and you get honored as a broadcaster. You know, we know your illustrious career, and this is how they describe it real quick on their site. Pro Football Hall of Famer. Career began at KMOX in St. Louis, hosting talk shows, calling Mizzou football, Cardinals football, and Blues hockey. Dan's broadcasting talents are known nationally from his NFL work on ABC's Monday Night Football and later as a member of CBS's NFL broadcast team. And while your national work is so well known, Dan, I know that means a lot to you to be recognized locally because this is where it all started.
Well, and it all started at KMOX. And I owe it all to Robert Hyland, who gave me a chance. He supported me. He was just hugely instrumental in any success I had. And to think that I was fortunate enough to sit in the sports office there at KMOX, and my boss, of course, was Jack Buck, who was the sports director. And I look to my left, and I'm looking at Bob Costas, I'm looking at Bill Wilkerson. I'm looking at Dan Kelly. I'm looking at Bob Starr. It just goes on and on and on. And to think that I was able to cut my teeth and to learn the right way to be a broadcaster, to think that I had a chance to do that at Camo X, I was so fortunate.
How well do you remember that very first conversation where they say to you, hey, we want you to do this. We want you to give this a try, and we're going to bring you in. Do you remember much about that?
Oh, I remember specifically because I was still a player. I had an opportunity to be in the off season, working at Camo X, developing time behind the microphone, but I was still a member of the football Cardinals. And I started my career. The last year I played was 1983. I started to work at Camo X in 1976. And so I had years worth of experience, and I had a job waiting for me at Camo X, which was an unbelievable luxury for me to be able to continue my football career and at the same time to know exactly what I was going to do when my football playing days concluded.
We had Bob Costas in town this week. He was here Sunday at Busch Stadium doing the NBC game at the ballpark. I spent some time with him Monday doing an interview with Norm Stewart, believe it or not, who is 91 and going strong. And we just had Norm was on the phone with us, and Bob just loves.
Bob is Bob.
Loves KMOX in St. Louis. And I just, man, I wish I was around to see the two of you working together back in those days.
Oh, God, we had fun. We were doing Sports Open Line together, and I would do every Friday, and Bob was getting started on a national level. He would do a baseball game on Saturday, so he would always go to the park on Friday to watch the game the day before. He was to do his telecast, and we would do a thing called the Friday Frank forecast, where Bob would critique the various dogs and sausages served at that ballpark, and we just did ridiculous things. We extended it to Greater St. Louis. One time, I drove through the drive-in window at Woofie's Hot Dogs, and Bob was actually inside serving me, and we did this live on the radio, and Bob and I have a rich history together. We talk all the time, and I look back on it. What a golden era for radio in St. Louis.
Well, we have been very lucky to have so many great broadcasters come through here, and in particular come through this station. And, you know, you end up being on Monday Night Football broadcasts, which really, I mean, other than, you know, the Super Bowl itself, that's the jewel in the sports calendar. Every month or every week is a Monday Night Football broadcast, and you got to be part of that for a long time.
Oh, 12 years, and when I did Monday Night Football, it was still Monday Night Football was the premium package in NFL broadcasting. We got the best games. We had the best schedule week in and week out. And it was, I couldn't hardly believe it. My first year at Monday Night Football was 1987. And in my last year as a player was 1983. So that was meteoric to be doing Monday Night Football at my age and as little experience as I had. I worked at CBS TV for 2 years, but it was all those countless hours behind a microphone at Camo X that I was older experience wise than I was chronologically. And that's all because of the gift I got of being able to sit behind that microphone at KMOX.
You had the opportunity to work with one of the all-time greats in Al Michaels, not to mention Frank Gifford. What a team that was. But I note that your relationship, let alone your on-air relationship with Greg Gumbel, was something special. The two of you spending so much time together, we certainly miss Greg Gumbel, and I thought of you immediately of all the times that you spent away from the cameras. Had to have been unbelievably rewarding.
I was so fortunate to I have such a rich list of people that I worked with. And you're right, my last partner was Greg. He and I were together for 8 years, and I can hardly believe that that he's gone. I'm trying to describe him. Was, you know, what a rich sense of humor, so much fun. Didn't take himself seriously at all, and that person that we all fell in love with. Hosting the basketball tournament, and his smile, his ease of laughter, and he was just a great human being. But to think that my broadcast partners, I worked with Vern Lundquist, I worked with Al Michaels, I worked with Dick Enberg for years. I did games with Lindsey Nelson, Dick Stockton, Ray Scott. I was never, and then of course, you know, it started with Jack Buck. I was never in the broadcast booth with a dum-dum. I never had to spend. Now, I can't say that for the play-by-play guys. They may have a different opinion, but I never, I did Mizzou football with John Rooney and Bill Wilkerson. I never worked with anybody. I never worked with a stiff. I was so, so lucky.
Really, I mean, what a great run that is. And boy, Bill Wilkerson was so good, and John is so good today. Oh. And, you know, I think about Jack Buck, and I've mentioned this to you before, Dan, is that hearing you speak, and even today, I can hear Jack. Like, there was an influence there. What did he teach you? How did he influence you?
Oh, Jack was a... Jack was like a second dad to me. I valued his friendship. All those years I did Monday Night Football, Jack was doing Monday Night Football on radio with Hank Stram for the CBS network, and so we would normally stay in different hotels because the companies, you know, ABC was booked this one place. But every Tuesday morning, I had a limousine because I was doing Monday Night Football. I would swing by Jack's hotel and pick him up because we would always fly home together. And it was such a great time of my life. But it in some small way, I felt like I was paying Jack back for all of the, I retired. I played my last game for the Cardinals. The following weekend, I am doing a national broadcast on CBS radio because it was divisional weekend and there were four games and Jack and Hank could only do two. So CBS had to hire a broadcast crew just to do a game on Saturday and a game on Sunday. And Jack Buck convinced CBS Radio to hire me to do those two games. The first time I was ever in a broadcast booth in my life, I'm doing a national broadcast on CBS Radio. And it was all because of Jack Buck. His guidance, he would say things to me like that in 1984, he and I called the football Cardinals together. And we'd go to a commercial break, and Jack would say, "Hey, Dan, since our last commercial break, you used the word incredible like three times. You need to develop a Rolodex of your adjectives. So you don't have to, you don't use them very often because it'll drill a hole in the head of the listener. And just little tips like that, that I've never forgotten. And I mean, seriously, talk about being able to sit at the foot of the master and it might as well have been Plato or Socrates. I was the student and he was the professor.
Dan, you spent the last several years of your broadcast career back in the Michigan booth as an analyst there. And, you know, you played at Michigan, as everybody knows. I am sitting here with an Indiana guy. How do you feel about what the Hoosiers have done in college football?
Well, I feel like I'm in some alternate universe.
So do I.
Could that really have happened? I know that before Kurt Cignetti got to Indiana, I believe Michigan's record against Indiana, it was something like 88-12, or it was some ridiculous figure. And you know what? Talk about a long-suffering fan base. And you know, if it wasn't for Bob Knight in Indiana basketball, those people would have led a miserable existence. And because you know what, I took a recruiting trip to Indiana. It's one of the most beautiful campuses I have ever seen. I love Bloomington. I love Little Zagreb Steakhouse. Mm-hmm. It's a great school, and with a lot of St. Louisans who go there. But you know what? I'm a Big Ten guy at heart, and I was rooting for Indiana all the way. They're carrying the Big Ten banner, and I've got their back. But it just shows you the new era of college football. Programs can do a 180 and turn on a dime.
It really is amazing. I still don't feel like it's real that we are considered a college football power at this point. We still have another one. You know, we're still checking a few off the list here. Michigan in the Big House this year, October 24th. I may have to head up there.
Yeah, that's, you know, we'll be there. We'll be there. Now, what are they going to do in Bloomington about of getting a bigger stadium?
Yeah, that's true.
You know, you got to be talking. I mean, our stadium in Ann Arbor, we're more than twice as big as your stadium.
Yeah, absolutely right. So if they're spending $32 million or whatever it is on their football roster, I'm sure they can throw down a little bit for some stadium upgrades. It's amazing.
Well, I'm sure. Yeah. I'm sure that tickets to a home game in Bloomington that's a rare commodity.
Yeah, things have changed. Dan, every week we do a Budweiser Toast of the Week. It's presented by Budweiser for 150 years. This Bud's for you, and obviously we are toasting you today, my friend. And congratulations on your MBA Hall of Fame induction on Friday at the Lake of the Ozarks. We're so happy for you, and we're so proud of you here at KMOX Radio.
Well, once I go in, the floodgates are open. Anyone has a possibility now. It's wide open, and who knows who might go in next year.
Have a great day. Safe travels to the lake, and have a great time.
All right. Thanks, guys. You got it.
Thanks Bye-bye. So much. Dan Dierdorf with us on KMOX's Gas House Gang. That was fun. We'll take a break. We'll come back, get back into some more baseball before we go. 1 o'clock is when we depart and turn it over to the DGS on KMOX.
Now, back to the Gas House Gang.
Sponsored by Saliga Heating and Cooling. And by Overhead Door Company of St. Louis. Chesterfield Fence and Deck. And Budweiser.
On 104.1 FM, KMOX.
Rod, you want to issue a correction?
Yeah, I don't want the soccer people to be mad at me. But the United States in their first FIFA World Cup game will happen June 12th. It's a Friday. They don't play against Bosnia, but they do play the same day. So Bosnia, Canada play at 2. The U.S. and Paraguay will play at 8. So I'm so sorry. I just didn't want the soccer people to come after me.
I think it's going to be okay.
They'll come after you.
We are close to adding Brad Davis to our guest list next week.
Fantastic.
The former United States men's national team player, St. Louisan, on the Gas House Gang. We've been talking about the upcoming friendly between Bosnia, Herzegovina, and Panama, and wait until things start to crank up with the U.S. team around here. That's the best thing that could possibly happen, is that the United States team makes a run. That would be great for the sport in this country. We will be back tomorrow with Chris Ranji and Bernie Miklas on the Gas House Gang. Thanks for joining us on KMOX.